necessary. And so it's a 3-session course. And tonight is the first session on the early Jewish sources to do with mental health, and also the Jewish view towards treatment. And so that's tonight's session. And Rabbi Gerari, I just want to say personally how honored I am to have you once again address our community here in Maroubra and beyond, whoever's here tonight. But I always personally enjoy your shiurim, and it's wonderful to be able to expose you to our community and have you. And I also thank you for your time in preparing this and delivering it for everyone who's here. So I'm going to hand over now to Rabbi Gerari, and I'm logged in here as the admin, so I can mute everybody, which means that we won't hear any background noises. And I will mute myself because my kids are going to bed, and you'll probably hear some background noise very soon. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. But I will just unmute Rabbi Gerari now.
Am I muted yet? No. Oh, there we are.
There you go.
Okay, you can all hear me? Someone give me the thumbs up here just to make sure I can... Yeah? Rabbi Friedman, I can be heard? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Can be heard.
Okay. So firstly, I want to just thank Rabbi Friedman so much for inviting me to address the Maroubra community. And now, as I say, as he said, it's Maroubra community and beyond. As you said, it was arranged a long time ago because it's an important topic, and it always was an important topic. It's a lengthy topic, an involved topic, and that's how we're going to try and do it over 3 weeks. And just really, really thank you for inviting me and for arranging it. And I want to wish you and the Maroubra community just a lot of success from strength to strength. And very soon we should all be back in shul and davening together and holding events together. As great as Zoom is, it's not quite the real thing. So, in recent weeks, I would say that before we begin, I think this discussion has become even more critical, because I think there's no question that on many levels, what we are going through now is definitely impacting on many levels on the mental health and emotional well-being of many people. This is not necessarily true with everyone, but we shouldn't pretend that it's not happening, because it is happening. And I know, I'm sure people know, they've talked to people that are going through a tough time, emotionally, mentally, or on other levels. And there's some obvious causes why this is happening. First of all, loneliness is an issue. There are many people that are finding themselves very challenged during this period of time with the lack of human connection and interaction. Another very important cause, I think, is uncertainty. The Talmud tells us, "Ein simcha kehatarat ha-sveikot." There's no greater joy than clarity. And just generally, people who have a little bit of a disposition to depression or anxiety, this kind of situation can certainly ignite that and certainly propel and make it worse. So the concept is to talk about the Jewish perspective of mental health. And like Rabbi Friedman mentioned, that tonight we're going to, just to give a general introduction, we're going to talk about the Jewish approach to health and treatment and medical intervention, and talk about some of the early sources, some of the fascinating things, the early sources that deal with this concept in Talmud literature, in Tanakh literature, and so on and so forth. Now, before we talk, you'll notice that the topic, correctly so, talks about mental health. And we didn't use the word mental illness. Now, to be clear, not because mental illness is a problem, isn't important, it's very, very important. And that's, we're going to have a very big discussion, and we're going to talk about various levels of mental illness and so on and so forth. But the reason I always like to call the discussion about the Jewish view to mental health is because I was guided by something that the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to mention often about always creating positive energy and creating optimism and belief and trust about the possibility for healing and the hope that in fact things which are in fact illness can be healed. And he had this very interesting thing where he didn't, in Hebrew, in Ivrit, a hospital is called Bet Cholim, which literally means a house for the sick. And he was very insistent that hospitals shouldn't be called that. It should be called Bet Refuah. It should be called a place of healing, right? You shouldn't emphasize the pathology, but rather emphasize the hope and the potential for healing. Now, obviously, when you talk about a hospital needs to be very focused and very conscious of the illness. It needs to diagnose illness. It needs to provide treatment. But the goal and the emphasis of the goal always has to be, how do we get a person to the level of healing, right? I had a discussion with someone who used to visit here. His name was Dr. Rothschild. He just passed away not so long ago. And he built a hospital in Bnei Brak called Mayanei HaYeshua, which means wellsprings of salvation. And he told me, he wasn't actually a Hasidic gentleman at all, but he told me that in very early on when he was building the hospital, he in fact had a discussion, he had a private audience with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who urged him and he pleaded with him, please not to call it Bet Cholim. And he did, and he listened, and he actually called it Mayanei HaYeshua, and he always liked that whole idea that a hospital has a place which has to give hope and emphasis on healing. So therefore, it's appropriate to call the topic the Jewish view on mental health, because that's the goal. The goal is health. But in the process, of course, we need to acknowledge and we need to be conscious of the fact that there are things that prevent health, both physically and emotionally and mentally, and therefore talk about it. Now, it's a very important discussion. It's an important discussion on two levels. First of all, as Jewish people, we always try and discover and think about and reflect whenever we encounter something, whenever something is in the news, whenever something is a topic of discussion and conversation, it's always important as Jewish people to include into the discussion what is the perspective of Jewish teaching, what is the Torah perspective. And that's part of what we're going to try and do. But it's also a very important discussion generally because mental illness, as we know, is prevalent. It's a very important topic to raise awareness about. And when we talk about mental illness, obviously that's a very, very broad term. Apparently, in the clinical descriptions, there's about 200 classified forms of mental illness. It's a very, very broad definition, and it's a very complex topic. I must say, a number of months ago, there was a whole section in the Jewish news about this, and it was very well done, and it was very clarified very properly. And I'll just quote some of the things that they discussed there when they talk about what is mental illness, so we know what we're talking about. So mental illness, as we say, is a range. It could be something as extreme as psychotic illness, which really has relatively low prevalence, or it can be something like OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, or depression or anxiety, which actually is very prevalent, right? Part of the goal, of course, is to understand that, to take away the stigma. But coming with that, we need to understand that it's quite common. They talk about, I don't know if these numbers are 100% accurate, but they talk about 1 in 5 people at some stage of their life suffering from some mental illness or some mental stress, right? And taking away the stigma, therefore, is really important, so it becomes part of the discussion. And the reason that it's so important to become part of the discussion is that there's then a aspiration and an interest to seek help and to seek healing. Now, when I talk about the stigma, I want to just talk about this for a moment, because the truth is that in Jewish communities, and particularly in religious Jewish communities, it was common, it is changing, but it was common for the stigma to be even worse. Right? Now, there's all sorts of reasons for this. People don't like to highlight sicknesses. In some Jewish communities, some religious communities, there's an issue of shidduchim, because you know people get introduced to one another, so people are scared that there won't be interest on part of certain families, because there might be, if they find out there's mental illness in the family, and so on and so forth. So there's always been stigma around mental illness, and particularly in Jewish communities, and particularly in religious communities. I have to say, thank God it is improving, and I'll just give you a couple of examples. I mentioned before Dr. Rothschild, who built the hospital in Bnei Brak. Bnei Brak is a very Haredi stronghold, as you know. And he built a hospital there, and his last project before he passed away was he successfully completed the building of a mental health wing in the hospital, right? A psychiatric ward, a psychiatric wing in the hospital, which until then there was been resistance because they didn't want to highlight mental illness in the heart of Bnei Brak, but he was successful in changing that, and he built that wing. We know that most Jewish schools and religious schools included now have therapists that talk to teachers and in-service teachers and raise awareness and train people to notice and to acknowledge the warning signs of mental illness among the young, among children, among teenagers, and so on and so forth. That's really, really improving. And just another example, there's an unbelievable organization, a website actually, in New York that's there for the New York tri-state area called Relief, and it's a referral system. And I heard an interview about the person with the person who began this whole website, and he explained that since in the last number of years, there's thousands and thousands of calls. In other words, people are acknowledging that they might have had mental illness or someone in their family does, and they're in fact seeking help, which is a great, which is a great improvement. So the stigma is disappearing, but it's not enough. We're not yet at the level where we treat mental illness as any normal sickness, and therefore we still need to talk about it. We still need to raise awareness. We still need to discuss it, and that's what I want to try and do tonight, and do it from a Jewish perspective. Now, I just need to give a disclaimer here. I have a passion for these type of things. I have a passion generally for personal growth. Those that have heard my shiurim know that I give many different talks on personal growth and personal development and so on and so forth. I'm very much connected with a lot of psychological issues and so on. But I'm not a health professional. I'm not a trained counselor. I'm not a therapist. I'm just a rabbi. And I just have a passion for these type of things. And I try to reach out to people and help them as best I could. And I'm saying that because I'm going to talk about the importance. And part of the discussion, mainly next week, maybe will also be the different roles between the therapist and the rabbi, or the religious input and the professional input. And that's a very, very important distinction to make. And that's why I'm just highlighting the fact that although I'm talking about these issues, I'm not a psychologist and I'm not a trained therapist. Although my brother in New York likes to call me a frustrated psychologist, but I'm not. Okay. What I'm going to share with you in these few weeks is based on literature, based on reading, based on Torah sources, also a lot based on the writings of Rabbi Dr. Tversky, who's both a rabbi and a psychiatrist, Dr. Pelkovitz, who's a Torah scholar, but also a very leading psychologist in Yeshiva University, very, very leading mental health professionals. So I'm taking a lot from what they say and so on and so forth. So if there's any therapists in the audience here tonight, please don't catch me out on things which might be slightly inaccurate. It's the general principle that really is so important, which I want to share with you. Now, I want to, first of all, spend just a couple of moments. I'm talking about the Jewish perspective on seeking intervention and healing, the healing process for mental illness, the way it would be from the perspective of Torah principles. And let me start with the general health principle, right? So there's a few famous verses in the Torah. The one verse that we find in the Torah is "V'nishmartem me'od l'nafshoteichem," you should guard your soul, which we know the Talmud explains us is a reference to looking after your health. There's a mitzvah, it's an obligation, meaning it's a mandatory mitzvah that we have in the Torah to look after our health, right? Which means we have to live in a healthy way, we have to live with a healthy lifestyle, and it also includes that when something goes wrong, we need to seek medical intervention, which is also connected to another very famous verse in the Torah, which says, "V'rapo yirape." It's a double expression of healing, and rape, refuah, also comes from the same word as rofe, which means doctor. And the Talmud says that from this verse we learn that nitan reshut lerofe lerapot, that the doctor was given permission to heal. Now, it would sound obvious, wouldn't it? But it's not so simple, because actually it was a subject of a theological debate among great scholars through the ages. There was a theological perspective that perhaps going to a doctor is wrong, because if God gave us an illness, maybe we meant to have that illness, and who are we to interfere in God's business? In other words, if we really believe that everything comes from God, which means when we fall ill, He is the one that gave us that illness, so who said we had permission to go to a doctor? So it's a nice theological debate, but the bottom line is, overwhelmingly accepted as a Torah view, as a Jewish view, that no, God has His business. He sends us certain challenges, but part of the purpose of the challenges is to overcome them. Part of overcoming them on a very physical level is to seek medical intervention, proper medical intervention, and seek a healing process. Now, it's got to do also with the whole concept of this philosophical idea that our bodies actually don't belong to us. That's why in the Torah, for example, there's a prohibition against self-harm, against doing things to our body that could be detrimental, and so on and so forth. So it's not ours, it belongs to God. We have to look after it. We have to look after our body, we have to look after our soul, and we have to therefore, when something goes wrong, we have to seek help. Now, what does it mean to seek help? And what does medical expertise mean? What does medical intervention mean? So I want to just go through this on a general level before we get to mental health, because it's so important to understand. We know the Torah is eternal, and its mitzvahs are eternal. However, when it comes to medical intervention, the Torah itself mandates, right, that the way we seek medical help is by relying on the most up-to-date and the most researched medical advice and information that is available at the time, right? In other words, we have a philosophical belief that healing comes from God. We say this every day in the Amidah. But God sends His healing through medical intervention and medical advice and medical assistance. What is legitimate medical assistance? Actually, it varies from generation to generation because every generation knows more. When the Talmud spoke about the doctor having permission to heal, it was a different type of doctor in Talmudic times. They didn't have all the research available that we have now, right? Coupled with another concept that the Talmud tells us, that the makeup of the body, even things that the Talmud talks about, which are medicinal in nature, and it's part of Torah, but nevertheless, the application of it does change from generation to generations because our bodies change, our realities change. As the term in the Talmud is nishtanu hativim, the nature of people evolve and change a little bit from time to time, and therefore, what is, you know, it has to do with climate, has to do with society, has to do with pollution, has to do with lots of things, and therefore things develop. I mean, now is a classic example. We didn't have this virus until now. This virus is a new virus, right? So. Things change, and therefore we have to go by the advice and the information and the research that is available to us at the time. I want to share with you an amazing example of this. And I'm going to quote from the Aruch HaShulchan. Aruch HaShulchan was a great halachic authority. He lived in the 19th century. He was born in 1829, passed away in 1908. His name was Rabbi Chil Michel Epstein. A very, very famous halachic authority. He wrote like an 8-10 volume work on halachic law. And there he discusses seeking medical help, and he says the following. He brings this concept that the Torah gives permission for the doctor to heal, right? And then he says, this is a mandate from the Torah, and then he says the following. Mihu. He says, however, and I'm reading from the Hebrew, but I'm going to translate. He says, it is forbidden for a person to practice medicine unless he's an expert and he has permission. Now listen to this, because he's talking in a context where Jewish communities were run by a Jewish court of law. So he says a person in Talmudic times or Mishnaic times, a doctor can only practice medicine if he's considered an expert and he has reshut, he has permission from the Beit Din. Now he says we don't have a Beit Din that runs the show like that. So therefore he says, Ve'ha'idna, nowadays, a person has to have the license from the government of the place. He has to be a licensed medical practitioner. Also, in a community, if a person is practicing medicine and there's someone clearly that has better expertise than him or her that can do the job, he has to defer. Because it has to be an expert, it has to be someone that is qualified. So we see that from the Torah perspective, halachically, seeking medical advice means seeking. You'll see why this is so important in the context of the discussion now. But seeking proper medical assistance and support, which has to come from a proper qualified medical professional. Not to say that all medical professionals and all licenses are perfect. There's a lot of debate between modern medicine and conventional medicine and herbal medicine, alternative medicine, all this kind of stuff. But essentially, it's got to be a qualified practitioner, because qualified practitioner, the Aruch HaShulchan says, relies on the research, the up-to-date research that is available at the time. Is the research perfect? Not necessarily, but we've got to do our best in every generation. Okay. And there's many, many sources like that. I just gave you one. Translating it or transferring this to the area of mental health. So we have many, many sources that tell us that mental health is identical. This goes back early sources or sources in last generation. Notwithstanding the stigma, notwithstanding the misunderstanding that mental health is just like physical health, but nevertheless, we have many, many sources that equate mental and emotional health with medical health, with physical health. In fact, the Rambam, Maimonides, going as back as early as Maimonides, right, who has a whole section in his magnum opus called the Mishneh Torah, where he deals with health. He lays out a diet. He talks about medicine. He was a doctor. Maimonides was a doctor, qualified doctor. Right? And he says that one should distance oneself from things that destroy the body. Right? He says, what's the purpose of all of this? The Maimonides says, the main purpose of not doing anything that will be detrimental for your physical health is that a person should be emotionally and mentally strong so they can serve God properly. right? And Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, great halachic authority of the last generation, speaks about this, and he says, therefore, it is an obligation to seek help when a person suffers from things which could be categorized as mental health, and he talks about things like substance abuse, addiction, addictive behaviors, and so on and so forth. These are detrimental to the person. Number one, they can be physically detrimental, but they're certainly emotionally and mentally detrimental, and therefore, under the category of the obligation to seek the healing process, one is obligated to seek help for these things as well. Because actually Maimonides is telling us that the purpose of physical health, really actually the primary health of the person, is the mental and the emotional, and it is affected, which we know now today to be quite 100% true, it is affected by the physical health as well. The two things go together, and they're all part of a group, they're all part of a category of a person's overall well-being and a person's overall wealth. Now, what is interesting, however, just one difference that we do find between mental health and physical health in terms of how we seek medical intervention, and this is something also that is interesting that Ramosha Feinstein writes about and others write about it as well, and that is like this. When you have a physical problem, a physiological problem, a heart condition, a sugar problem, a diabetes issue, whatever the case is, a thyroid issue, you go to a qualified doctor, you go to someone that's an expert. It makes no difference who that person is, as long as they have the expertise. In other words, whether that person is a religious Jew or not, whether the person is Jewish or not, whether the person is sympathetic towards religion, really makes no difference. If they have the expertise in that area of physiological health, that's good enough. There is a bit of a difference, however, when seeking professional help when it comes to mental health. Now again, if you have a mental illness, you don't go to a rabbi. A rabbi plays a role. And I'll come to that next week in greater detail. Rabbi plays a role. Religion plays a role. All these things play a role. But that's not what you rely on. You go to a doctor or you go to a licensed therapist as you would do for a physical, physiological problem. However, mental health is more complicated than physical health in a more obvious way. Because mental health, there's an interplay between physiological issues, that's why we have medication sometimes, between real sickness and emotional well-being, and mindset of the person, the attitudes of the patient, the attitudes of the person going through. Depression is often a combination between a physiological imbalance and a mindset and a belief system and a worldview and looking at the world through dark glasses and so on and so forth. There's a very complicated interplay between the physiological and the mental and the emotional. And therefore, as Jews, Rabbi Feinstein does say that it is important when one seeks a therapist, one seeks a medical expert, it should be someone that at least is sympathetic to the value system of the person and his family. In other words, if a person is a religious person, for example, and this has many ramifications, right? It is important, it does make a difference who the therapist is. You have to seek a licensed therapist, but it does make a difference because it's important, because sometimes a therapist could inadvertently, or intentionally sometimes, in the process of healing, undermine the religious beliefs or the value system of the person, and that can be overall detrimental physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And therefore, it's interesting that just the one difference between seeking help for mental illness as opposed to physiological illness is this concept of finding someone that is sympathetic to the values that you subscribe to. Now, I want to point out something else that's really, really important. When we talk about depression, or we talk about anger, a person who's got a personality disorder, or a real anger problem for which they need help, or an addiction, and so on and so forth, right? So I want to point out a definition and a very important distinction. When I said before that when you have a mental illness, you don't go to a rabbi, or you don't learn Jewish ethics, or books of Hasidism or Kabbalah, what do I mean by that? Because the truth is that in these works, there's a lot spoken about all of these things. There's a lot spoken about not overindulging. There's a lot spoken about joy and happiness as opposed to depression. There's a lot spoken about personality improvement. In fact, what's interesting is that we are currently in the Jewish calendar in a period called the Omer. And the Omer has 7 weeks. We're counting the Omer. And the reason it's got 7 weeks is because we are taught that between Pesach and Shavuot is a time where we are supposed to work on personal refinement and personal development. And that's why we have 7 weeks, because a person has seven emotions, seven categories of emotions which govern the personality of the individual. And we all have our weaknesses. Some of us like to overeat. Some of us like to get angry. Some of us are jealous, right? We all have personality weaknesses. And the Torah therefore tells us that we have to take these 7 weeks. Generally, we have to grow. But particularly in these 7 weeks, we need to work on that personality. We need to work on our whole makeup and our whole personality responses and our emotions and so on and so forth, and improve on them and become a better person, a better human being. However, here's the important part, the important distinction to understand. Not every time a person feels that they can't control themselves and they can never eat supper without having a second portion and an unhealthy dessert, it doesn't mean that they have to run to a therapist, right? Because we all have personality weaknesses. Some of us get angry quickly. Some of us are jealous. Some of us are control freaks. Some of us, we all have a personality weakness, right? And in the Jewish tradition, that you don't have to be mentally ill for that, you just have to be a human being. Human beings are imperfect. And we are taught and we are given a body, a wealth, a library of information to learn and to study and to be inspired to work on ourselves constantly. We are taught in the ethics of the fathers, Pirkei Avot, which is a body of Mishnah that deals with the personal development of a person, that Asei L'Charav, one should have a spiritual mentor, one should have good friends. These are all support mechanisms for a person to work on their physical, on their mental and emotional weaknesses and their personality weaknesses to improve. So what's the difference between just a regular personality weakness and a mental illness sometimes? Besides, I'm not talking about psychosis or very extreme things, but even things like being down or having an anger problem and so on and so forth. The difference is the control. In other words, the fundamental principle in Judaism is that although we all have mental personality weaknesses, but we have a choice to control it. We need help, we need support, we need to be inspired, we need to learn. We need to learn Kabbalah, we need to learn Hasidic philosophy, we need to learn ethics, we need to have a spiritual mentor, we need to have friends. All true. But we have the control. It's our decision whether we're going to help ourselves, or we're going to control ourselves, or we're going to control our indulgences, whether we're going to respond with a temper or not. It's all in our control. It's a fundamental principle in Judaism that we have bechira, we have free choice. However, sometimes it happens, and sometimes it's a bit of a gray area, but often it's clear, where a person falls into a trap where nothing works. In other words, it has become out of control, it's become beyond the control of the human being. Addiction, when it's really an addiction, is out of, you can't learn ethics for that. You have to go to a professional. Why? Addiction, the definition of addiction is that you cannot live without it. You've lost control. You've lost the control. A person who has an extreme anger management problem, they've lost control. That could be an abusive person. People are abusive people, aggressive people who cannot control themselves from being violent to in relationships and so on and so forth, are not well. They have to get help. You cannot say, you know, go and just go to a rabbi and get be inspired. It doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? Because that's not what it was meant for. They've now lost control. Once a person's lost control, they're an unhealthy human being. And when a person's an unhealthy human being, they have to seek help. So depression, for example, and we'll see later, I'll talk about this in greater depth. I always talk about the difference between, this comes from Dr. Pelkowitz. He always talks about depression with a small d and depression with a big D. Depression with a small d is when we wake up in the morning, we're in a bad mood and we're just, you know, prone to being miserable. We don't need a doctor for that. We need to pull ourselves up. We need to get inspired. We need to learn. We need to get a mentor. And we need to get help. But depression with a big D means when a person is now in a situation, now in a frame of mind where they actually can't help themselves. They're out of control. It's not anymore. It's beyond their own control. That's when it transitions from a personality weakness to a pathology. And for a pathology, you need proper medical assistance with a licensed doctor or a licensed therapist or a licensed counselor or social worker or whatever the appropriate professional is. Now, in that, there's a partnership between the professional and the spiritual guidance and religion and so on, which we'll talk about next week. But the primary intervention has to be seeking proper help. And I just wanted to make that very clear. And that was one topic that I wanted to address today. And that's important, that it's something that some communities in the Jewish community have to really come to terms with. But now, as I said, it's improving and it's now recognized as a proper pathology. And when people go through that, it's not just a stage, it's not a phase, it could be a real thing. And we need to be able to help ourselves and encourage others to seek proper help. Now, I wanted to address just a very interesting topic and to explore, and I think this is a good thing to do with all topics, to explore what are the early Talmudic or Bible Torah sources actually say about this. And in the context of illness, needing treatment, do we find this? Do we find this in the Talmud? In other words, is this a new thing? Or in fact, did Judaism always believe this really? Was there always a concept of mental illness, an illness to the point where it's defined as an illness that requires treatment? Surprisingly, perhaps, the answer is an absolute yes. In fact, there's a long discussion. There are many, many sources that we find this issue. And I'm going to share with you one or two. But the first one I want to share with you, I find fascinating. And it goes back to Tanakh. And it's a story with King Saul. Now, I need to give a little bit of an introduction here. Generally speaking, just this is my bias, and this is the way I was trained and taught. I'm always very, very careful when I learn Tanakh, when I learn the stories of great tzaddikim like King David and Moshe Rabbeinu and so on and so forth, including the sages of the Talmud, who were great people spiritually, head and shoulders above everyone else. I'm always very, very careful not to humanize them, right? Although we learn sometimes that Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake and King David sinned and so on and so forth, believe me, these were great people, and it's not sins in the context of the way we understand sin. It's another discussion, it's for a different shiur, but I really am very, very strong about understanding the piety and the holiness and the saintliness of these individuals, and therefore their weaknesses were weaknesses, but in a completely different context, on a completely different level. However, there's one sort of interesting example where I suppose it's different. And the reason that it's different is because it actually is connected with a mental illness, a mental malady. And therefore, it's not about humanizing, because a mental illness has got nothing to do with the emotional, spiritual level or strength of the individual. It's an illness. And therefore, an illness can strike anyone and makes no difference. So it can even strike a tzaddik, a pious person. So let me give you the introduction to this. King Saul was the first appointed king over the Jewish nation. He was appointed by Samuel the prophet, by prophecy from God. And then there ensued he was a great tzaddik, he was a humble person, he was spiritually head and shoulders above the others, the Tanakh tells us. But afterwards, Shaul did sin, he failed. He failed particularly in a number of areas. One of them is his pursuit of King David. He didn't want King David to become the next king. He didn't listen to God in a few different instances, and he failed. And King Samuel the prophet told him that he was going to lose his kingdom. God had taken away his kingdom, and that he was on the way out, so to speak, and ultimately he would die, and the kingdom would be transferred to King David. So the Tanakh tells us, and this is the book of Samuel, chapter 16, verse 14. And it says that the Spirit of God departed from Saul, and he was tormented by a ruach ra, like an impure spirit. Right? Now, the translation of that word is difficult, and we need to look in the early commentaries how they translate the word. Because what it seems to describe afterwards is that Saul was hit with an amazing depression, a sort of a darkness, a paranoia. And they had to bring. They tried to bring musicians to play music, which is, I guess, a form of therapy. And they tried to sort of really lift his spirits. But what actually was he going through? What was he experiencing? So I'm going to share with you a translation from the 15th century. The great Abarbanel, one of the great commentators on Tanakh, and this is then repeated in another commentary, a very famous one called the Ma'am Lo'ez, in the 18th century by Rabbi Yaakov Kuli. And Abarbanel says that Saul, King Saul, was tormented by a deep melancholia. He was melancholy. Right? Now that's a very interesting term, melancholy. Where does that come from? What is the term melancholy? Now it's interesting. And that's the term that Abarbanel uses. It's an ancient term for depression, right? But let's understand what type of depression. I'm going to share with you what I think is an amazing thing. The term melancholy is a translation. It's a Latin term. It's a translation. The Hebrew form of that is what we call Mara Shchoira. Now, some of you might know Yiddish. In Yiddish, they refer to someone who's in a bad mood. It's Mara Shchoira. It's like dark. But actually, it doesn't actually mean that. Mara Shchoira normally is referred to a person who's depressed. But the actual literal translation of the term Mara Shchoira is black juice, which is exactly the same word as melancholy, because melon means... it's like black bile. In other words, melon actually means black. Kali means like a bile or juice, right? And this is a term which is also used by the Rambam, by Maimonides. I'll share with you in a minute how that works. And it's describing the condition of depression, right? Now, it's connected to a theory, and I'll show you why I'm telling you this in a minute, because it's something absolutely amazing. It's connected to a theory which was adopted by the ancient Greeks, the Romans, later even Islamic physicians. Fascinatingly enough, it's also a concept mentioned in the Zohar. And the concept is, the theory goes, that the human body is governed by four juices: white, yellow, red, and black. And according to the ancient theory, a person is healthy and a person is in good health when all these four juices are in balance, are there in a balanced way. When one of them gets out of balance, when there's an excess of one of these juices, when it's too much that they're supposed to be, the person becomes unwell. And the theory was that when a person experiences an excess of black juice, whatever that means, the Mara Shchoira, the black bile, the black juice, that causes an imbalance in the body, and it causes a person to go into a depression. And Abarbanel says, that's what happened to King Saul. When the Spirit of God left King Saul, he went into a deep depression, which was connected with the anxiety and paranoia, as the Abarbanel explains, and he needed to be treated. And the word that he uses for is melancholy, which is this black juice, this imbalance of black juice, which is a description of real depression. Now, what I find so amazing with this is I'm actually quoting from something Rabbi Twersky, Dr. Twersky writes. Because what's interesting about this is to put it in the context of modern medicine. See, in Freud's days, early on in Freud's, who was considered the father of modern psychology, but nevertheless, and he puts it in a very simple way, and which is good for us who aren't all professionals, and he writes, at the risk of oversimplification, the concept was like this. In Freud, the way he taught his students was that depression is an emotional state which is connected with a loss, right? Even in the modern context, it can certainly be triggered by a loss. So it can be triggered by a loss of a loved one, by a loss of property, by a loss of resources, whatever the case is, which also perhaps connected with the common occurrence of women who give birth, who suffer from depression. It's also a concept of loss, because the baby that was within them is now outside of them. It's a kind of loss. And Freud went so far as to say that when there's no sign of any loss, then it's triggered by a subconscious loss which a person experienced in their youth, which has now come out somehow in some sort of fashion and triggered the depression. All right? That was his argument. However, later on, they disputed him, and in fact, even himself in his later writings, he said there will come a time where they're going to be able to explain depression differently, and he says eventually they will have biological explanations. So what happened was that they realized eventually that it was actually physiological. A lot of times it was connected with a physiological situation of an imbalance within the person's body. It's a fascinating way how they described it, it was in the late 1950s where they realized that certain medications were causing depression, right? One was a particular medication which was used for high blood pressure, so much so that when Dr. Twersky himself practice when he was young, he's a very old man now, when he practiced psychiatry, when someone would come in to the psychiatry unit presenting with very, very deep depression, the first question that used to be asked is if there are any blood pressure medication, and if they would be on this particular medication, they would take them off it, and often that would be enough to remove the depression. So it's then that got them thinking that it can actually be caused physiologically by some balance and by some imbalance, right? Which is then they went further research and they came up with this concept that really depression can be a combination, it can be many things. Obviously, it's very complex, but there's a significant part of real clinical depression that has to do with a physical chemical imbalance within the body. What's amazing is that that really was the original thought in early Jewish writings, in a different context with different terminology. But the concept of melancholy, the concept of marash chara, which the Abar Benel describes King Saul with, which the Rambam talks about, and the Rambam offers all kinds of different therapies of looking at beautiful buildings and gardens and going for exercise and doing hearing music and so on and so forth. But using it and describing it as marash chara, which is melancholy, which is a physiological thing, was actually the original theory in Jewish writings, in Jewish early sources, which was then in more relatively recent times, in Freud times, was kind of disputed. They didn't know what it was, and they put it down to an emotional problem of experiencing a loss. But really, when they discovered that it is a physical imbalance, the way Dr. Tversky says it, that the view of the Rambam, the position of the Rambam and the ancients were actually vindicated. So not only is mental illness mentioned early on in the Torah, in Jewish sources, but actually the very modern application of mental health and mental illness, describing it as an illness, exactly what it is. And today, all the writings, when we try to remove the stigma, we talk about that, you know, a person has a heart condition, they go to a doctor, a person has a mental illness, they go to a counselor, they go to a therapist, they go to a psychiatrist. That, right, that's very much part of ancient Jewish writing that associated, for example, depression or paranoia with actually a physiological imbalance that needed to be treated, that was a part of a sickness that a person was experiencing. I'll just tell you one or two other concepts where we find this in early sources. The Talmud has a whole halachic body of literature that deals with psychosis. Now, the reason that the Talmud does this, and it's called a shoteh, someone who's insane, right? Essentially, it's really talking about someone who's going through a psychotic experience or delusional, and a person who lacks the ability to distinguish fantasy from reality. The reason that the Talmud discusses this is because it has real halachic implications. And the Talmud deals with this very early on, because the Talmud talks about the responsibility of the person, both with regard to their obligation of keeping mitzvot, both whether they can be counted a responsible human being, whether they're responsible if they damage, So it was very clearly in the Talmud that when someone is under mental duress, as much as Torah never likes to say that if a person is stressed, they can be abdicate responsibility, that is not a Torah principle at all. However, when it comes to real mental illness, the Talmud is very clear that if a person can be diagnosed as being someone who's suffering from a psychotic or delusional incident, or that's his reality, that person actually becomes not responsible and therefore cannot be held responsible for various different things. There's a fascinating body of literature that deals with what we call a shoteh ledavar echad, which means a person who's delusional, but only with regard to one thing, right? There was a whole story about someone who I forgot exactly the case, but someone who was fully functional, fully normal, except for certain times and certain things, they were just delusional. There was a person, it's a whole story about a particular story with a get that was given in some community, that the person was a shoteh davar echad. They really believed they were Mashiach, which is normally a sign of psychosis, but otherwise they were fully functional, right? So that's also a whole discussion about what that means, and also that's a modern psychiatry and psychology, that is a condition. A person can be a partial delusional, they can be delusional with regard to certain things, and otherwise live a very, very functional life. Another example that we find in early Talmudic literature, and I'm just going to cite this example, is something that's very much discussed today, very much there's an awareness of today, and that's the effect of trauma, right? Now, in modern literature, it's relatively a new phenomenon because it wasn't always understood. It wasn't always understood how emotional trauma, for example, can affect a person long term. You know, we were kids, I'm sure some of you remember this, there was this little nursery rhyme or poem, whatever, that said, you know, how did it go? Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me, right? That is absolute rubbish, as we know. Sometimes words can hurt a person and hurt a child's life more than sticks and stones can, right? And that's a very real thing. Verbal abuse, particularly in young children, which comes together with manipulation, with emotional abuse, can have very, very long-term effects on their emotional and mental well-being, something which is now understood, but something that's very clearly already enunciated in the Talmud. The Talmud talks about the concept of halbanat panim. Halbanat panim means embarrassing someone, humiliating someone, particularly in public. And the Talmud says, I'm not going to go through now the whole source of how the Talmud arrives at this conclusion, but the Talmud says that it is worth it. It's better for a person to jump into a furnace of fire rather than to embarrass someone else and humiliate someone else in public. In other words, what the Talmud is really saying is that embarrassing someone else, traumatizing someone else in public, humiliating someone else in public is tantamount to murder. And one is not allowed to murder in Jewish law, even if it means saving your own life. Right? You cannot take someone else's life on account to save your life. And the Talmud is so strong that it equates halbanat panim, it equates the long-term effect of traumatizing someone by humiliating them in public to murder. And there's so much we find in the Talmud about kavod habriyot, the dignity of the human being, and preserving the dignity of the human being. And now we know so much today in modern day research about keeping a person's, you know, eternal self-esteem, dignity intact is so important for their long-term well-being and for the emotional well-being and so on and so forth. So, just to summarize so far before I end off with something important, it's clear that in modern and ancient halachic literature, based on ancient Jewish sources, is the following. Number one, that mental illness exists, and it exists in a form of illness. And therefore, it needs to be treated like an illness, and therefore, well-being is the responsibility. It's a moral responsibility, it's an obligation, and just like we have to look after our physiological and our physical well-being and health, we have to look after our emotional health, and therefore, if someone experiences mental stress or mental illness, it's not a stigma. It's just like getting a flu or getting a heart condition, and a person needs to be able to seek help and feel they can seek help, and they can look out for a medical professional. What's the type of help? It doesn't mean talking to a friend, although friends are very important and play a role. It doesn't mean talking to a spiritual guide, although it does play a role. It means seeking out professional help, professional intervention, proper medical qualified advice to be able to seek the support. Now, I just want to highlight a very, very important problem, a very important issue that extends the obligation a bit more even than physical well-being. You see, the problem with mental illness, where it becomes very different from every other illness, is as follows. When a person experiences physical illness, physical unwellness, or whatever the problem is, often a person can be physically very weak, be experiencing a disease, have a bug, have a virus, God forbid, have whatever it might be. But while the person is still conscious, the person's cognitive ability is still intact. And because the person's cognitive ability is still intact, they have a choice. And their choice, therefore, is a moral obligation and a moral choice to seek help. In other words, if I am unwell, if I think I'm developing a problem, a physical problem, and I say, no, I don't have time to go to a doctor, that is a transgression of Jewish law. And it's immoral, and I have to go because it's a mitzvah to look after my health. It's my responsibility. Others can help me and inspire me and support me, but it's my responsibility if I choose not to take care of my health, not to live in a healthy with a healthy lifestyle, not to seek professional advice when I need to, when there's a weakness. That is my irresponsibility. It is my spiritual weakness. It is my wrongdoing. The problem with someone who experiences mental health is that they're often not in the position to make that choice. Because mental illness, by definition, means that the person is mentally stressed. And therefore, they don't often have the capacity to actually make that choice. In other words, while the mitzvah remains the same, the mitzvah is exactly the same of seeking professional and medical treatment, it's not so much within the control of the person experiencing it because they don't know they're experiencing it. They don't know necessarily, or they're not mentally strong enough to say, you know, I really need help. I really need to do this. Sometimes they are, but sometimes not, depending what the issue is. And therefore, what some of the sources tell us, and this is common sense, but it's such an important problem, it's such an important issue. And that's why having discussions like this is so important, right? Because, you know, I can see we have 40 so participants in this, and some of you, I suppose, are more than one person, right? Statistically, either there are people here that are experiencing, and that's fine, their own mental weaknesses, or they know someone that is, someone in your family, or someone you know, a friend, a relative, whatever the case is. Seeking treatment, seeking help, seeking support for mental illness is not an individual responsibility. It's a collective responsibility. It is everyone's responsibility. Because the person is not able to do it themselves. We have a principle in the Torah that we are ravim zelazel, we are responsible for each other. And therefore it's so important that we discuss it, and so important that we become aware of the warning signs, and we become aware and we have a consciousness of what people look like when they are experiencing mental stress and mental weakness, so we can help them, we can encourage them, we can inspire them. It's not so easy sometimes. Sometimes they resist. One has to seek help of how to inspire them. But at least we have to have that awareness. We have to reach out to people. Rabbi Palm, who was the Rosh Hashiva, a very famous Rosh Hashiva, famous Hashiva in America called Torah Vadas, he used to say that in the Torah there's a mitzvah called Hashavat Aveda. When you walk in the street and you see someone's lost an article, there's a mitzvah to return it. So the Torah says that when you walk in the street and you see that someone's lost something, Lo tuchal hit alem, it's a transgression, it's a prohibition to make as if you didn't see it, to ignore it. Ignoring it is a prohibition. So Rapam said that when it comes to people's mental health, when it comes to getting people back to a mental strength and a healthy mental state, it is Hashavat Aveda. It's the mitzvah of returning themselves to themselves. It's a mitzvah of helping them. Lo tuchal hitalem, we dare not, and we are prohibited from ignoring it. We have to reach out. And I say this, I was going to say this anyways, before the coronavirus. But this concept now is so important, because we can never know the effect, and hopefully next week I'll tell you some stories that are so powerful. We can never know the effect of reaching out. Sometimes just the reaching out itself already helps. Just telling someone you care. I can see you, you know, I can see you down today. Are you okay? You know, they have this thing, which is it's a great campaign. It's in the suicide prevention sphere. They have this once a year, they call this Are You Okay Day. I would submit we have to make every day Are You Okay Day, right? Not obsessively drive people crazy, but our mindset has to be looking out for people. More so now, we all know people that might be alone. We all know people that we know, but we haven't spoken to them for a while. During this period now, as we're going through this, I mean, hopefully they're lifting restrictions, we're going to return slowly back to normal, but right now we're not normal. So therefore, we need to, more than before, you never know who's suffering. I'm telling you, there are people, I know this because I've been connecting to people, a lot of people who are challenged this way. There are people going through tough times. You know someone you haven't spoken to for a while, they're not your close friend, but you talk to them once in a while, pick up a phone tomorrow. Just take five people and pick up a phone and say, how you doing? Is everything okay? You never know what you can do. You might save a life. You might restore someone's well-being to them. You might just be able to encourage them. You know, why don't you go and see someone? I mean, I did that. I did it with some people. People have phone appointments now. All this kind of stuff. Why don't you just get some help? It's okay. It's okay to be down. It's okay to get help. It's not a stigma. It's okay. Just reaching out. So what I wanted to just finish with tonight is this concept that it's an mental illness has been in Jewish sources for ages. It's an illness, like everything else. We need help, and the obligation is to protect the health and to seek help. The difference is that when it comes to mental health, it is everyone's responsibility, not just the individual's responsibility. I mean, it's always good to help people on all levels, but it's everyone's responsibility because we need to reach out to people because they maybe not be able to reach out to themselves. And we never know, just reaching out to someone or reaching out to a family member. You know, I see that person lately, just not himself or herself. They're down. There's something's bothering them. Maybe they're going through, maybe it's nothing. But maybe it's something. You never know what you're going to wear. And to do that, we have to familiarize ourselves with the issues. Next week, we're going to talk about some specific mental illnesses or mental problems that's worth thinking about and worth knowing just the basics about, and also seeing how it fits in with Jewish perspective and so on and so forth, because we never know who we can actually help. So that's it for tonight. Thanks for listening. Next week, I'll just tell you what we're going to do next week. This is over 3 weeks. So next week is part two. We're going to talk about some specifics like depression, anxiety, addiction, OCD. We're going to talk about the very important concept of the partnership between spiritual Torah guidance and professional guidance. And also try to talk to some specific, interesting halachic responses to people going through mental illness and how that affects their specific level of observance and practice and so on and so forth. So thank you very much for listening again, Rabbi Yossi Friedman. Thank you so much again for inviting me and for organizing this, and I look forward to next week and the week after.
Shakaya, thank you so much. I feel like we should issue certificates. It's a 3-week course.
That's right.
But such an empowering message, and thank you so much again for agreeing to do this with your time, and no one can quite deliver it just like you can.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure, and yeah.
And we look forward to the next installment next week, same time, same place, everybody. And spread the word, please. Let your friends know. This is a topic that's not often spoken about, especially from Jewish sources, and especially in a session like this, in a 3-week session like this. So please tell your friends. And look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. All the best. Bye bye.
Thank you, Rabbi Galari and Rabbi Janina Joltuk. Fantastic.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
By the way, Jewish Key are running a mental health course. I don't know if any of you are aware of it. You might both be aware of it. I think also 2 weeks' time, they're running in connection with the suicide prevention.
Yes, suicide prevention, yes. Important stuff.
You need for anybody around as well.
Thank you.
All the best.
Okay. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye. Okay.